is from James, the 5th chapter, starting with verse number 1. Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as if it were fire. You've heaped up treasures together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who reap down your field, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived in the pleasures of the earth and been wanton. You've nourished your hearts as in days of slaughter. You've condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. We need to know and to understand that in this day and time, we are truly blessed. We of much of the world are very, very rich. Our poor are rich compared with most of the rest of the world. Speaking with my daughter Jana, who spent 6.5 years in Africa as a missionary, if those folks have 2 sets of clothes, they consider themselves blessed. Many of them have 1. How many do you have? How many shirts? How many pants? When's the last time you missed a meal? Because there was no food. We are very rich compared with much of the world living today. And certainly if we want to look back at the past, we are extremely blessed. Now I think it's important to understand that God does not condemn the rich for being rich. That's not a curse. Some of the godliest people in the Bible were very rich. You think about Job. You think about Abraham, Joseph, David, Solomon, and the list could go on and on. It's not a curse to be blessed. But you know, in Matthew the 19th chapter, verses 23 through 26, Jesus does speak of the difficulty that the rich have of being saved. He described the rich having the problem of a camel fitting through a needle's eye. Now, I don't know about you, when I think about a needle's eye and trying to thread a needle, I don't know if my hand shakes or the needle shakes or the thread grows when it gets closer, but I have a real hard time getting that thread through that needle. That's a very vivid picture to me. And you think about a camel. Have you ever been up close to a camel? They are some of the most ungainly animals that there are. I mean, and what are they designed for? To carry a load. Now you imagine a camel with a load trying to fit through a needle. It's just, what a beautiful word picture describing how difficult it is for a rich man to be saved. How difficult it is. God in some places, though, our text, for example, is very angry at the rich. We're going to look at this text and kind of tear it apart a little bit and try to answer 4 questions. Number 1, who's he talking to? Who's he addressing in this passage? What's in store for these folks that he's talking about? And why is God so angry at them? And then the important part of the lesson really is, how do we apply it to us today? Okay? You look at it, you think about it for a minute in these first 6 verses of the 5th chapter of James. Are these Christians? Are these wealthy Christians that are preying on the poor? Well, I guess in a sense it could be, but I really doubt it. I think it's much more likely that he's talking about rich Jews that are preying on Christians. He nowhere says in this passage, brethren. He does down in verse number 7, but there he's saying, be patient because the Lord's coming to take care of the problem. He doesn't call them brethren. He doesn't call them to repentance even. He condemns them over and over again and talks about how difficult life is going to be for them in the future. The brethren are not addressed as said till verse number 7, where he said, you be patient. You be patient. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. I think more likely these are unbelievers who have oppressed the Christians in verse number 6, said, you've condemned and killed the just, and he doesn't resist you. This almost tirade of judgment appears to be for the purpose of comforting the brethren. He said, look, I know what they're doing. I've heard your cries, verse number 4. And I'm the Lord of Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts. That's not Lord of Sabbath, it's Sabaoth. He says, I'm the Lord of hosts. I'm the Lord of all power, all majesty. In other words, I can handle the situation. I've got all the power I need, and I hear your cries. You just be patient. Have you noticed God doesn't work on our time frame sometimes? Oh, boy, oh boy. You know, like the Lord, give me patience and do it now. Doesn't work. It just doesn't work. God's going to work it out in the way that's best. He said, you just be patient and let me handle it in the time that I need to. Judgment is coming on these rich oppressors. You just need to be patient. Now, what's going to happen to them? What's in store for these rich oppressors? And remember, he's writing this to the folks who are brothers, who are Christians, who are being oppressed. And he said, now, you think about it for a moment. These rich folks that are oppressing you, he says in verse number 1, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. They're going to be weeping. They're going to be howling. It's talking about them as though they're occurring at this time. That's how certain it is that it's going to happen. Their riches are going to be corrupted. Their garments are going to be moth-eaten. Their gold and silver is going to be corrupted. And when you think back to that day and time, they didn't have Chase Bank to take and put their money in and get great amounts of interest back and grow their wealth. When it talks about their riches are going to be corrupted, it's probably talking about grain. It's probably talking about foodstuffs that they had put aside. You know, you can only take and put foodstuffs aside for so long. Have you ever looked in the back of the potato bin and found that last nasty little potato back there that's got the fingers all sticking out of it and it's all wrinkled up and you've saved that one and it's gone? It's been corrupted. That's what he's talking about when he says your riches are going to, and then your garments. It was many times folks would have wealth, would want to have huge closets. And then, you know, things haven't changed a whole lot in that. Have they? I mean, you think about what we read about these movie stars and these wealthy and their closets are bigger than my house. And the hundreds and hundreds of shoes. I was watching a little thing on the preparation for a field trip with the Buckeyes as they were going over to Indiana yesterday. And they had a trunk that was about, it must have been that big and stood about 6.5, 7 feet tall and was probably about 4 feet deep. And the young lady that was doing the interview says, "What's this?" And the guy opened it up, and it was all their shoes. This whole trunk was nothing but shoes. Because, you know, you can't go to a football game and play in the same shoes everywhere. If it's wet, you need longer cleats. If it's dry, you need shorter cleats. If it's slick, you need another kind of cleat. If you got a hurt ankle, you need another kind of shoe. And, you know, they've got 3 or 4 pairs of shoes for every player. And she stood there and looked at that and said, "Could I get one of these?" And he just grinned. She said, "No, I'm serious. I want to know who supplies this. I need one of these. That would clean out my closet and make my life a whole. That is neat." She leaned her head in and looked both ways and just almost drooled over this trunk full of shoes. your clothing is going to be moth-eaten. Now, we know that gold and silver doesn't canker, doesn't rust. But if you put it aside, have you ever taken your silver out, if you have any, and you open it up and you haven't looked at it for a couple of years, it's all dark and it's all nasty, and you got a hard job cleaning all that up. That's what it's talking about. It's discolored. It shows signs of being put back and not being used. That's the accusation here. These folks had gotten wealth, and they had put it aside. They didn't even need it. They didn't want to use it. They just wanted it there. And it had all decayed and looked dirty. And he said, that rust is a witness against you. And it's going to be like a fire that's going to eat you up on the judgment day. You're going to have to answer for those moth-eaten clothes that you didn't share with somebody who didn't have. You're going to have to answer for that grain that's rotted away when there were people that were hungry. You're going to have to answer for that corroded silver and gold when people were homeless and hungry. He said, that's all going to be gone. You know, the anguish and the misery of poverty is different for somebody who grew up in it. That's just the way it is. You know, I grew up in a government housing project in a steel town up in Massillon, Ohio. We didn't have a lot. We didn't miss many meals. But we didn't have a lot. We didn't go on vacations. We didn't do all those kind of things. And that's okay. That's what everybody in the neighborhood did. Nobody had a lot. I remember when I got a bike. It was one of the few bikes in the neighborhood. Everybody wanted to take a ride on my bike. I mean, it was neat. I was king of the block, man. I had a bike. Because nobody else had one. Today, kids want cars. They don't want bikes. I didn't know anybody when I was in high school that had a car. Oh, I could use my dad's, but it wasn't mine. It wasn't mine. And you know, that's okay. You were satisfied with that. Dad would let me use the car every couple weekends. And I thought that was wonderful. Now kids complain they bought me an old junker. They didn't buy me a new car. Guy down the block got a brand new car when he turned 18. You howl and you weep when you lose it. Those folks that had all it, and then you remember what happened during the Depression? Extremely wealthy folks taking headers out of the windows of the office buildings. I'm going to have to go to work. I won't be able to take a trip down to the Bahamas for the weekend. I won't be able to send my kids to the greatest colleges going. They're going to have to go. They couldn't handle it. They lost it. They were weeping and howling for their miseries. They understood, hey, it's not there anymore. And I can't handle that. I think probably the miseries that we're talking about and the loss that we're talking about here happened in AD 70. This was written about 66, 67. So the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the Jewish economy, the destruction, really, of Palestine was just a few years away. And they were going to find out. You know, if you're already poor and barely getting by, it's not so bad to be poor and barely get by. But man, if you're used to snapping your finger and somebody brings you food, that's tough when you got to go out and hoe the garden. That's tough when you got to be the one that takes the trash out instead of expecting it to be emptied. That's hard when somebody, you actually expect me to put my delicate little fingers in the dishwater And wash my own dishes? No, I don't expect you to wash your own dishes. I expect you to wash mine. Oh my. How horrible that is. Those rich Jews who oppressed the Christians were getting ready to weep and howl. So you just be patient, brethren. God's saying, I'll take care of it. Says they were heaping up treasures together for the last days in verse 13. It was the last days. They just didn't understand what that meant. They thought they were saving it up for later in their life. Didn't Jesus tell us a story about that? The parable of the rich farmer that tore down his barns and built bigger barns and said, you know, eat, drink, and be merry. You're taking care of the rest of your life. And God said, you fool. Whose is it now? Whose is it now? It was going to be the Romans. That's whose their wealth was going to be. But they thought they were saving it up for the last day. And what they were saving it up was in the last days of their nation, of their economy, of their lifetime. Reminds me of folks today that save and save and save and scrimp. Save enough for that retirement. And then die before they retire. Die before they retire. How sad that is. How sad that is. So why was God so angry at these rich folks? Well, number one, it tells us because how they used their wealth. How they used their wealth. Look in the verse number 3. You heaped up treasures together for the last days. They hoarded it. They didn't use it. They spent it, in verse number 5, on living in pleasure on earth and being wanton. You nourished your hearts. That's why he was angry. And then verse number 6, you condemned and killed the just. Commentators have a real problem trying to figure this one out. Could it be that they were killing just people? Or was it the just? Jesus, is it talking about the fact that with their wealth and with their power and with the Sanhedrin, we're able to have Jesus crucified? And he says, you're going to answer for that? He didn't resist them. He didn't resist them. Not only, though, but how they used their wealth, but how they obtained their wealth. Look at what it says in verse number 4. The hire of the laborers who reap down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud. That reap down your fields, isn't it? That's an expression, an idiom, if you will, of who worked for you. Whether it's cleaning your house or making your furniture or your clothing or your shoes or whatever. Folks that work for you, you kept back their hire. And you're going to answer for it. You're going to answer for it. You got rich through dishonest schemes, if you will. You didn't pay a living wage when you should have. You had unjust labor practices. Things haven't changed much, have they? Folks still try to do that. And they're still going to answer for it. So now, what kind of applications can we draw for us? 2012. What's the application for us? I think, number one, we need to be careful how we use our wealth. And believe me, we have wealth. We have wealth compared to the world. Do we spend it on luxurious living while others are suffering? We better go back and read these 6 verses again. We better think about it. We need to be careful because that's exactly what James is describing in this passage. 1 John 3, in verse number 17, says, when we spend it on ourselves, it's an indication of a lack of love for God. A lack of love for God. According to the New Testament, then the overall picture, the purpose of working is not to obtain wealth. The purpose of working is not for our gratification. The purpose of working is so that we can help others. So that we can help the poor. It's what Paul says in Ephesians, the fourth chapter, in verse number 28. That's what he also told Timothy in 1 Timothy, the sixth chapter, in verse number 17 and following. He says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor that they trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Now, did you catch that? It's okay for rich folks to enjoy life too. That's why God gave it to us. That you can do good. That they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. Now, listen to this last verse, number 19. Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. Is there a foundation under your life of good works? Or are you living in the now? Are you living for the way you can enjoy life and the way you can expend life? We need to be careful how we use our wealth. And we also need to be careful how we obtain our wealth. To do it at the expense of others will bring God's wrath down upon us. Whether that includes cheating from the boss or the boss cheating you, either way, are you given a day's work for a day's pay? Are you willing to pay for a day's work when it's given to you? We need to be careful how we obtain our wealth. And it's wrong, folks. It's just flat wrong to think that success only comes by putting other people down, by stepping on others. And you know they're out there. Folks like that are all over the place. Stab you in the back in a moment. Steal your ideas. Claim for your work. We need to be careful how we obtain our work, our wealth. Paul says in 1 Timothy 6, let's back up to verse 9 and 10. He says, they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lust, which drown men in destruction and perdition, for the love of money. Not money, the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they've erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And folks, those are not just sorrows in this life. Those are sorrows that are going to be there on the judgment day, when they'll be weeping and howling for the miseries that are there. It's not riches that are wrong. The desire to be rich is wrought with many dangers. Many dangers. Riches are not wrong if they're brought about as a product of your endeavors. But they are wrong if that's the goal of your endeavor. For example, one desires to be a doctor. Do you do it in order to help other people? Or do you do it because, man, that's a way to get wealthy and to live the good life and to have the big bucks? You become a plumber because that's a skill that you have and something you desire to do and enjoy doing. Well, if you receive riches from it, and believe me, they make pretty decent money. But if you're doing it because you desire to do it and the riches are a byproduct, then that's the value society puts on it. And that's fine. But to enter such a profession strictly because that's a way that you're going to get rich gives you something to answer to God for, because you're enslaved by the love of money. The love of money. So how do we obtain our wealth? You and I. How do we obtain our wealth? If we do it honestly, and we're compensated adequately for a job well done, I think God's pleased. That's the way it ought to work out. But if we obtain our wealth by hurting others and making wealth our primary objective, then we're in danger of God's wrath. And I don't think any one of us want to stand before God and have Him angry at us before we ever get started. I know I don't. Living in this country and in this society, we have much to be thankful for. Much to be thankful for. And we also have much to beware of. Because we live in a society when it's quite possible to become wealthy. And then we're going to have to answer for it. We live in a society where covetousness and desire to be rich is the norm. That's considered to be okay. Society doesn't consider that wrong. Heaping up treasures for our own gratification is considered a right, not a sin. And folks, it's easy to get influenced by those values. It's a dangerous time we live in if we let the world influence us. I think we need to ask ourselves constantly, am I laying up treasures in heaven or laying up treasures on earth? Those who lay up treasures in heaven are those who use their wealth to do good and to help others and to help those less fortunate. Verse 17 of 1 Timothy 6, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, that they don't trust in the riches, but that they do good, that they rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up for themselves a good foundation. A good foundation. But those who lay up treasures on earth are like the rich folks in our text. There's going to come a time when miseries are going to come, when they're wealth is gone. You don't think that can happen? Oh boy, you go back a few years when the stock market took a dive. Investments disappeared overnight. Companies that were thought to be sound were gone, and their retirements with them. But worse than those miseries are the wrath that's to come, because the judgment day is coming. These are sobering thoughts. There are thoughts that every one of us need to carefully consider. Now I want to ask one more question. Have you even begun to lay up treasures in heaven by your obedience to the gospel of Christ? Have you submitted to His will in the way that you live your day-to-day life? Have you been immersed for the forgiveness of your sins? Are you walking on the narrow path that leads to heaven? Or are you out there in the world trying to obtain your wealth however you can? Can we help? please, won't you give us that opportunity right now to come to Jesus in humble obedience. Won't you come now while we stand and while we sing?